Hello there. We'd like to welcome you to the virtual kitchen table. We're Erin from Everlearning, Ashley from Ashley as Mama and Storytime Shelves, and myself, Hayley from Taking a Kinder Path. We're gathering for conversations about family life and home education, particularly unschooling, which is sometimes known as self-directed learning, or as I like to call it, natural learning. We'll be sharing our experiences and ideas, learning as we go. We hope you'll pull a chair up to the table and join us.
Welcome back to the virtual kitchen table. This is Erin here today and chatting with Ashley, and Kendall is back, which is great. Kendall has an Instagram account, Spark to Flame Home Learning, and she has been with us for a couple of other episodes. One about community, building and sustaining community, I think is episode 15. And one, I believe, What is Strewing is, I think it was episode 27. It was our last episode. So, or the last one that we recorded. So Kendall has agreed to come back and talk today. We're back to talking about community. And this is actually the third time we've talked about community, but maybe in different ways each time. So I think, Ashley, the first time we talked about it was with Hayley, and we were talking about like living and learning in community. And I think it was in the context of choice and education. Mm-hmm. And then Kendall, the last time we spoke to you about community, it was really the idea of building local homeschool community. And I think we just talked about some of the ins and outs of that. But that ended up being a really good episode. It's actually our most highly listened to VKT episode. I don't know if I've told you that. So so that would be a good one, because people obviously found that helpful. So we will link that. But that all said, hello to you both.
Hello.
Hello. Thanks for having us chat again.
Yeah, thank you for coming back, Kendall. This is great. So today we're talking about community again, but we're talking about it a little bit differently today. I think in the other two conversations, we were sort of pondering it, talking about our different experiences, and I'm sure there will be some of that today. But I think what we're also hoping to really tap in today is really pinpointing some practical ideas. And when I'm talking about community, we're talking about both like broader, broader in-person local community, and then as well, specifically homeschool community. And I hope we're going to touch a little bit on how those two kind of interact with one another as well. So I don't know, I thought maybe we could begin with the idea of like broader community, just get a sense of what we even think of when we think of community. Ashley, did you find it? I have a bit of a definition here too. Did you say you have one?
You can go ahead and then I can add to it. I do have it up, but you go ahead first.
Okay. The one I have is pretty basic. I think it was just like a dictionary.com.
Same.
But interesting. It's like short, but you know, it still brought some ideas. So the definition I have says a group of people living in the same place or having a particular characteristic in common. So I got thinking about how that kind of breaks it up into two, right? So a group of people living in the same place, I think we're definitely going to be talking about that, because we do want to talk about local community neighborhoods, like what's just available to us physically in our kind of general area. Not just what's available to us, what can we also offer community? Because I think we're going to be talking about practical ways to build and sustain community as well. And then the piece about having a particular characteristic in common, of course, speaks to the idea that we're also going to be talking about home education. And often you meet people you wouldn't otherwise have because you have that in common. And so building community in those ways as well. And I think that we are going to talk about community broadly first, but I just want to say that I think some of this conversation sparks from the fact that so many of us, I mean, certainly the three of us here, I've had conversations with each of you about it, but I think there is so much hope on the part of home educating families to welcome other people and to have you know, more community, more people, more connection among homeschooling. I certainly know, like, when my kids were growing up, it was always, like, it was always pretty exciting if a new family came along, or, you know, you were at something and you noticed a new family. So I think that's pretty usual that most homeschooling people, you know, they're hoping to kind of build and widen the homeschool community. And also really kind of, I think here, at least the three of us, it's certainly been on my heart, like from the beginning, is like, how do we welcome people, and how do we maybe find some way to help create conditions that allow more people to either homeschool or have more choice in education? So, you know, it's all kind of connected, but I think, as we talk today, I think probably more and more we'll see how it's all connected. But, you know, I definitely think that having a healthy and welcoming local community plays into kind of having a culture of learning locally and homeschooling as well. So, yeah, I've got more, but I will pause for a minute to see. Do either of you have anything you want to jump in with or ease in with?
I was just going to say that in part of the definition there, it was about a lot about the people. And while that is what you would think of as the basic definition of community, for me, it's not even about seeing the exact same people every time when you're out and about, but it's about the safety and predictability and familiarity of community, especially when we're looking through our children's point of view. And then a sense of belonging that comes as like a benefit of when you finally form a community. And I loved something you mentioned there, like that it's reciprocal in nature, like you can just join into a community, but I think it works the best when you're sharing, you're caring, and you're a part of generating the community and adding to it. And also, like, I wanted to, like, as I was pondering about this, I realized that it does take a little bit of work and time to build community and trust too. I think that's a factor of it too. Like, you can join a lovely pre-existing community and not feel a sense of belonging right away, because it takes that reciprocal nature of your commitment on your end to keep showing up, keep being part of. Like, you can't show up to a pre-existing community and maybe just expect to get. Like, there's that reciprocal nature when it works best. There are things like that. But when I feel like it shifts into a deeper sense of belonging and that commonality and that all of the byproducts of community, which are those things like security and familiarity, those come when you put work in on your end as well to deepen those connections and that trust. So those were just some things that came up for me when thinking about community as more than just the group of people. Like, what are its byproducts, and then how do you get there? Takes a little bit of work sometime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think what you're saying is similar to a note I had jotted down about, because I know, like, we can kind of all think about community in different ways. But one thing I wrote down was, like, when I think of community, I think of, like, connections with other people. But how often we connect with the people will determine, this is just the way I put it, but like the closeness of the community. So, and my kids are really good at this. So just as you were talking about that, Kendall, like we do have a group of people we meet with on a regular basis with, and it's been about a year now. So like the closeness is there and there's a lot of that. But we also, like, my kids will show up in, and I think this is what you were kind of mentioning too, because it doesn't really matter what people are there, but there's always different people. I'm thinking about our local trampoline park. It's not about, we don't often meet friends there. We often just go, and whoever's there is who my kids play with. But it's like, I forget what you said. I tried to write it down, but they feel safe because it's a space they've been in before. It's familiar to them. It's predictable. They know what they're going to do when they go to the local trampoline park. They know what the other kids, for the most part, are going to do when they're there. So, and there would have been a time before that I never would have used like our local trampoline park as a community space, but it is. And it's the same when we show up, like, say, to the library. Maybe we're not meeting friends there, But the same librarians there who we've seen many times before, and there's different kids there, but they also live in our neighborhood. So I think it's helpful to kind of think that community is not like just this one small definition, because yeah, we're all different people, and we all, like what we need and what we can give to communities can be different too. So I don't think there can just be like one ideal example, I guess, of what a community is.
What came up for me, I think, when each of you were talking too, is the maybe ideas of like intentional versus naturally occurring community, because I think they're both really, they're important, but they're also different, you know, they're different from one another. I was thinking the other day around, so if I'm thinking about naturally occurring community, I was having a conversation with a woman who would be, I think she's probably in her mid to later 70s. She was at the local pharmacy and she had a blood sugar low. She's diabetic. She had a blood sugar low and ended up feeling just like so taken care of by the staff until she could kind of, you know, get herself back to where she needed to be. She, I think she had either forgotten or she couldn't find her glucometer, which would be, she would be able to measure her blood sugars. So they gifted her one. She said, oh, you know, when I get home, I'll call you with my credit card number. The pharmacist said, please don't worry about that. And then the pharmacist called her at home the next day. And she was so like, she was just so taken with that. The fact that he had done that, the fact that he had followed up, and she was kind of amazed. We live in a, not a huge city, but a relatively kind of large cluster of communities. And so it's fairly urban-ish, right? And I said to her, you know, that is wonderful. It's so typical of what I grew up with in a small town though. And where your pharmacist would know you, their kids would be going to school maybe with you or whatever. It's just this whole other sort of energy or dynamic. And so we just had this conversation about how when people make an effort to do that, I mean, I think the larger the center, the more faceless it can seem at times, right? So you do have community, but it's almost in clusters within larger centers. Whereas growing up in a small town, like that was the community. But I was just, there was something there for me about, like, she felt seen and she felt like known and followed up with. And I think that so often when we're so individualistic and we're global now, and we kind of have the ability to seek out community, whether it's online or different places. And that idea of community being people that can actually help you with your basic needs is interesting to me. So like basically community based on proximity and need rather than special interest. And I remember when my kids were little, it might have even just been like a baby and a toddler, and I used to get really bad migraines, and my husband was working quite far out of town and really long hours, and I don't have family in the city that I'm in. And I remember talking to like a group of parents, and I was like, can we, I don't know what I was looking to do. I felt like we needed to set something up intentionally, some sort of like an emergency network or something that, you know, if somebody is, because my migraines are quite significant. Like I couldn't really take care of a baby and a toddler and be dehydrated and all of those things, like not easily. And so I was just sort of like trying to figure out, was there something intentional that we could do to set up some kind of a network? And people, I think people thought I was maybe like, they didn't really totally turn it down, but I don't think that they really understood what I meant. And I got thinking about the fact that so much we understand things based on our own needs, right? So like that pharmacist calling the woman for follow-up, she's a single person. She doesn't drive. That meant the world to her. Whereas for me, I probably wouldn't even think about that. I don't expect to hear from my pharmacist. I go in, I get my stuff, I come home. I have people, if I can't drive, I have people that can go get that for me. But at the time of having the young kids, it was so, well, I mean, we hear this said all the time. I think, you know, I can't remember what the term is now, but the idea is we build things, we create things when we need them. And so it's just kind of always been fascinating to me when I'll maybe notice a need and other people are like, well, what are you talking about? You know, so maybe they had family locally that I didn't have, but maybe they also just hadn't experienced the type of debilitation that I was talking about. They're thinking, oh, you're sick. Yeah. But for me, I was like, no, I'm actually worried about this. So there's something that's interesting to me on like an actual needs level. Definitely something that I see through the through work that I do, as far as quite a few of the people that I work with have various vulnerabilities. And so we're very intentional about setting up community. And the thing about being intentional about setting up community is that, like, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. As we know with our kids and everybody in our lives, you can want people to respond in a certain way. It doesn't mean they will. Or you can set things up thinking, oh, this would be great, and the dynamics or the energy might not be there. But I think, to your point, Kendall, those things take time and they're ongoing. So that's what I find with, you know, the people that I'm spending time working with. We're always planning, we're always building what we refer to as like layers of support, because you really need more than one or two go-to people to support certainly someone with vulnerabilities, but a family, you know, so it's something that's of interest to me, because I see the fallout when people don't have community around them. And it's, you know, in some cases it's actually pretty scary. So to me, it's kind of just something that I'm thinking about all the time, is this, building of community and layering of it, and just being interested in, like, you know, yes, special interest community is great too, but like on this basic level need community, what are we, how can we help with that? How are we part of it? How do we, you know, what do we need from it?
Yeah, that's really interesting. It's reminding me of how I was thinking about extended family, even as maybe like people thinking of that as something different than community. But from a home educating standpoint, I really was like, no, like, let's be more intentional with building connections and relationships with our extended family, because it's sometimes people think it's maybe a for granted community, like, but like any relationship, enriching it and putting time and effort into it will make it better. And so that came to mind when you were talking about these layers of community that you can fall back on and rely on, that kind of part of community where when you have the need and necessity, where do you go? And so I was reflecting a lot about how you can create more of a deeper bond with your children and their grandparents, for instance, by meeting the grandparent at their interest level. So baking with grandma, fishing with the grandpa, you know, getting your kids, setting aside time for them to be able to do that, to build bonds and connections that extend their community from your immediate family outward, especially if they're at a bit of a distance proximity wise, like you were talking a little bit about necessity and proximity as being one layer of community. So if your family is a little bit outside of your proximity, you might have to be more intentional. We've even started with our extended family doing cousin get-togethers with our cousins and their kids, so like second cousins, so bringing activities, games, crafts, so that when we get together, they're bonding and getting to know each other. Because it takes intentionality to make those things happen, and just building that and strengthening that type of community that we can often take for granted, but can feel disconnected if you're not putting the effort there as it would be with your, so I live on a cul-de-sac. And so when you were talking, I was thinking, yeah, like we have this little messaging group of, hey, this is going on. Hey, I heard this happen. So looking out for each other on a proximity basis, we might not share a lot of the same common interests. We might be at different points in our life, but our commonality is that proximity, keeping each other safe, caring about our surroundings and our neighborhood. So lots of things came to mind as you were talking there.
Yeah, we have that as well, actually, locally. I mean, we live in like a little neighborhood with a lot of homes in it. And Well, we know a lot of our neighbors. There's definitely more people that we don't know, or that, you know, we might see them out walking their dog or something. So we know a lot of them that way, but we don't know them really well. But we're connected. Like, we have a neighborhood Facebook group where often the posts are about that. It's kind of, oh, there was a coyote spotted, so keep your eyes out for that this time of year. Or I can't think now, but just little helpful notes, simply because we all live in this area together. So people go on and share. Or I've also seen things like, if someone has an abundance of vegetables in their garden, I saw someone not long ago post something about, they're at the end of the driveway, help yourself. So that's nice to see. But I wanted to comment about what you said about extended family, Kendall, because I was thinking about that as well. And I was thinking about how, well, a couple different things, because we don't live near our extended families. So one thing I noticed, especially in the earlier days when mine were really young, or when I had my first baby, and I really appreciated when neighbors would do this, and they would just, even before, like just when I was pregnant, we'd be out walking the dog and they would see that, you know, I was pregnant, and they'd say, if you ever need anything. And I even had some people say, like, I work from home, so like during the day, like if you need something. And then, yeah, once they were, and then I think seeing, probably again, seeing us over the park or walking the dog, having like two young children. And I wouldn't say there were a lot of different people offering all the time, but it was certainly something that a lot of people, and it was just a comfort to know even just that people were around if I did need something, and that they would be willing to help. And I think a lot, not all of them, but quite a few of them would ask, and they got to know that we didn't have extended family around. And they would comment on, oh, like, you know, that that's, like just a little bit more challenging, right? Like that we don't have like our parents to rely on, just like if like an emergency came up or something, that they wouldn't be able to get to us quick or help out, which was appreciated. But the other thing I was thinking about with extended family and community is that, and it's not always possible, not everybody has that, but when you do, and again, ours is from a distance, so it is about being intentional, and you know, the adults taking the time to organize and coordinate and plan for the cousins to get together, for example. And it's just so beneficial kind of all around. But what's really neat is like that's just such a nice, can be such a nice, I don't know, like safe way for our kids to experience community with people who we, I mean, a lot of us know our extended family more than maybe we know our neighbors. That's not always the case, but I just feel like it's kind of a, I don't know, like natural way for our kids to kind of like grow their circle of people. And again, it doesn't have to be family. It can absolutely be like close friends. But if you do have extended family, or like my kids, they have my nieces, so they just have two other cousins, so not a lot, but my sister and I have been really intentional about making sure that they spend enough time together, especially when they were young, because it doesn't take much time for the kids to not see each other or not see their uncle or even their aunt or their grandparents. And they're kind of like, who are you again, but like a little bit of like hesitation, right? So like that's time together often enough, and then they can experience just, yeah, being in community and being in relationships with people. And I think that that then can make it, you know, they kind of gain some skills and stuff, and then that can be branched out, and that circle grows to your neighbors, and it looks different for everyone. So I'm trying to be really careful, because I know that everybody has a different situation, but when you do have extended family, that's kind of what I was thinking a little bit about too, that often that can be our children's community, and like that may just be when they're younger, and then it really grows to others. But I know, like, I have a group of cousins, we're all adults now, and they've been close since they were little, and they've remained really close, and a lot of them still live close together. So
because the commonality there, you might not have the same interests, so mm-hmm. It's a whole nother level of learning, because you're like, well, the only thing bringing us together is that we're cousins, so we got to figure this out. Like, yeah, that's a big factor of it too. And then as we get older, you were saying that group of cousins, so often you start different pathways in life than some friends maybe, so then you can often drift apart because of those factors. But if you're just, the thing that brings us together is that we're family or that we're cousins, it doesn't matter if we're going in different directions, that there's that commonality and bond there. So that's really interesting. And that really pushes our kids into getting along with different personalities. Like it's left, like when we get together with homeschool friends, it's, oh, you gel really good together. Oh, you're a really good fit. Or, you know what I mean? Like you're more picking and choosing based on interests and personalities. Whereas family, you're learning some of those life skills because you might not be best buddies outside of the context of family. So there's so much layers of learning that happen there too, for sure.
It, you know, both with both of you talking about neighborhoods too, I just was thinking, I think sometimes if we're thinking about like practical ways to, like build community, yes, but sometimes I think too, we might miss what's already there. And so for me too, just remembering to take those opportunities, like we have a little girl just kind of across one of our streets close by. She often will have lemonade stands, bake sales. These are things that are really easy to drive by if you're in a rush or you've got stuff to do. But I think too, just that slowing down. I mean, Ashley, you've talked about this so much, this slowing down idea of just, yeah, just bringing our pace down and leaving space for things like that. So I think they seem like small things, but they really aren't, you know. I think in the big picture of things, they all kind of accumulate. I know, well, it would have been lilac season. So when was that? May, I guess. It was like a Saturday afternoon and we were kind of like hunkered down watching a movie and there was a knock at the door. And my reaction, because we do get we get knocks at the door for various reasons, right? So I don't necessarily jump up all the time and answer the door. And so I was like, oh, but then they kept knocking. So I was like, you know, I really should just see who's at the door. So I took a look and there were two people on the porch and it turns out, see, I didn't even know this. They live in a basement apartment in the house behind our backyard. Well, I didn't even realize this. I had seen people kind of go in and out, but, and so what they were wondering is if they could have some of our, we had two big lilac bushes that kind of like hang over the fence toward the house that they're in. And it was, I don't know, it was kind of like a cool opportunity because I said, oh, like, absolutely, you know, they're hanging right over there anyway. And then I said, actually, I'll bring you over some as well, but you're always free to cut some down. So I just, you know, I cut them a bouquet. I took it over and they were so thrilled, like, to meet us, you know, like we just knocked on the door. I couldn't figure out which door was theirs because it was like a different entrance. And took it down. They're certainly new to the area. I think they might've been new to the country. And like, so there's a grandmother, like everybody's coming to the door, like so grateful for these lilacs. And I was like, this was such a small thing, you know, just to, but I have to admit, there's been other times where I've just let the door go. Cause we're doing something. I don't always want to be not present with my family either. You know, you plan a movie afternoon or whatever. So it's kind of, there is that balance between our own lives and, connecting outwardly. But I don't know, we had something too just a couple days ago, like so simple, but our neighbor just reached over the fence with like a container of cherry tomatoes. She had a bunch of extras and we really actually didn't necessarily need any, but I'm trying to just be open to like receiving those too and turning it into, you know, a little bit of an exchange, because that really is how you get to know people. And people like to give, like to make that exchange. So for me too, it's just remembering sometimes like not to drive by the lemonade stand, try to, you know, answer your door, receiving what's on offer from people, because I do think that people are eager to connect with the people around them. We might just not, everybody gets so busy in their own mm-hmm. sort of, you know, life. We might not realize that. But each time I feel like there's just a genuine interest in connecting.
Yeah, I noticed that in our local, a different Facebook group. But it's, I think there, a lot of people have them, like the Buy Nothing groups. And I noticed, we actually have a couple. And in the one, Buy Nothing group, I've noticed several different times, kind of like appreciation posts around how it is such an opportunity to connect with someone else that is in your, not necessarily right in your neighborhood, but in your town that you maybe otherwise wouldn't have the opportunity to have met. There is something about like, just like a, yeah, it's like a small connection, right? It's not like going and spending time together, but just a small little, like what you were describing, Erin, like it's not a big commitment. I do hear what you were saying though, and I actually made a note of it about that balancing, connecting like with outside people, like outside of our family, but also connecting, making sure we spend enough time present and focusing on our own family as well. And sometimes that can feel easy and other times it can feel like really challenging. So I think just being aware of that. But it just also made me think about kind of like our neighborhood and our local community, just like the people around us and how that's changed from like before we didn't live here for a real long time before having kids, but for a little bit, and how that's changed even from when they were younger to older now. And our kids go and meet like other kids or maybe we haven't met the parents before. But just like, I find it kind of interesting how like we're not, it's not that we're not close. Well, we're not close to our next door neighbors, but I've just always thought it was kind of funny that like the people living right next to me, I really don't know that well, or even just kind of like the one gentleman across the street, like just really don't even see him too much. But there are people that there we've been intentional with, like making connections with. Like there's one family who they have kids around the same ages as our kids, and we don't spend a lot of time together. It's usually just like we'll run into them at the park and the kids will play at the playground for a while. And you guys maybe see me post the odd picture of their dog. So one thing we do for them, because they are in school and at work, and we'll go visit their dog. So it's such a win-win situation, but a small, like it's nothing to us, especially if we're not busy, to like, it's great. We get to walk over, we get to spend time with their golden retriever, who's like the sweetest dog. And they really like it because then they know that their dog, who would otherwise be like home on his own for the day, got to go out back, got to go outside, just had like some interaction. We always give him fresh water and stuff. So it's not necessary, but it just creates like a, like it means that like we love it for one. So we'd do it anyway. And it's a nice thing to do for them. But also like, I feel like if we need something, or if, like I would be more likely to ask them for help, or, and they have actually, like they have, when we had our dog, they came and helped with our dog at different times too. So it creates this, like, it just creates more connection and more community, I guess. And there's a few other examples, but we haven't always had that. And I think that's kind of the point I wanted to say too, is that, maybe it goes back a little bit to what you were saying, kind of like it also takes effort, obviously, but also takes some time, right? Like we've known, you know, just a few family, like that one family, and then a couple other families in the neighborhood. Like we've known them for, I mean, years now, quite a few years. And it's not like we were this connected and doing this stuff right from the get-go. Like it, you know, it actually takes quite a bit of time. So I think that's great when like a new family or a new person moves in the neighborhood and someone just shows up with like cookies or something. Usually the reaction like tells you, like, it's a small thing you've done, but it's like a feel good welcome, you know, here's who I wanted you to know who I am, and like kind of welcome you to the neighborhood. So yeah, anyway, I'll stop there. I'll keep going.
Yeah, I love that idea of like leaving intentional open space in your schedule that's lower living, that allows those more spontaneous opportunities for community. Like you're saying, the passing by of the lemonade stand, if you're not jam-packed scheduled, because the littlest thing to you might mean, like you're saying, the world to someone else. My husband's grandma used to say this quote, "People are my hobby." Mm-hmm. And I remember like I used to be part of a choir. And then over COVID, it dissolved. And so I thought, okay, well, kind of back to normal now. What's my hobby going to be? What's my outside of the home or whatever? And I realized like that sat so well with me. And it literally means leaving time and space. It's not any one thing. It's leaving some availability in your life to, I love to bring a little bouquet of flowers over to my neighbors. And my neighbor's son, for example, waters our plants when we're away, and we can give him a little gift in exchange. Anyway, but, you know, a friend or someone that's part of your community is going through something hard, you've got that pocket of space set aside for you don't know what, because your hobby is just people and community and being able to show that little bit of kindness that means so much more to them, probably. So I just love that whole idea of, yeah, leaving space for that.
The other thing I like about thinking about sort of the proximity end of community, and then bringing in what you've both said about the intergenerational kind of end of things, is that I think normally I think what's different, depending on where we live, but what can be different about sort of a local community or neighborhood type setting, is that it often isn't just people who are just like you, who think the exact same way you are. I mean, certainly some neighborhoods are set up around sort of age. There's maybe a common age or it's family oriented or whatever. But I can't remember what you said, Kendall. It was around the idea that when you're getting together with relatives, there is a bit of skill building there. Like you're connecting for the purpose that you're connected in another way. You're not the kids aren't necessarily getting together because, you know, they both like knitting, or they both like soccer or whatever. It's, you know, there's kind of a greater purpose, and you're all kind of putting your best foot forward, I think, a lot of the time. And I think that there's something to that because, And I guess where I'm thinking a lot about the intergenerational piece, where you don't necessarily, you can learn so much from one another. And I think we've been pretty fortunate, like our neighborhood tends to be really intergenerational. And so we have a lot of different ages, but we do have a lot of older people in our neighborhood. And I think when the kids had their newspaper roots, that was a huge community builder because they had that practical reason to see somebody. So you're not discussing the latest issues and you're not, you know, maybe connecting over music or anything like that, but you're just connecting because you have a role in their life every day and you happen to live a few streets over. And there's a good chance you're probably going to run into them at the local store or whatever. So to me, I always really loved that about the newspaper roots, is that it really gave them that intergenerational opportunity. It wasn't just about the only people we see in the week are exactly like us or exactly your age. So I feel like we've kind of been fortunate that way, that our neighborhood tends to be kind of naturally intergenerational. Our church has always been really intergenerational. So yeah, when I think about the richness of that for my kids, it's been significant. I think it's been significant that, you know, they just keep other people in mind that are not necessarily their peers. And in turn, like, Ashley, you had shared the story last time about your neighbor bringing over the sea glass and the, was it sea glass or was it gemstones?
Gemstones.
Yeah. And so it's like, it's just cool to see different ages of people keeping different people in mind. Yeah. And I'll just quickly say, and actually two of my guys had, I mean, I guess I would call it an opportunity, depends how you look at it. We had a very elderly newspaper customer. They were delivering the newspaper and she collapsed. It was a hot day and she collapsed in her driveway. And that was one of those safeguarding things where, you know, they knew her. She knew them. They happened to be there. And one of them stayed while the other, you know, they were pretty young, came back and got me. We called the ambulance, the whole thing. But she's just somebody that we are in community with because she lives six or seven houses down. But if they hadn't had the paper route, which now is no more because they're not doing papers anymore. But if they hadn't had the paper route, they wouldn't have probably been there, but they wouldn't have had that level of relationship with her. And they knew which other neighbors to connect. So then they talked to another neighbor who was able to sit with her through the evening. And we all kind of communicated about whether it felt like she was okay to be alone or not. But So that just makes me think too, sorry, I won't, but the digitalization of everything is so interesting, right? Because my kids, there aren't even paper routes as of last year. So there's like all these things that probably good for the trees, but not good for, you know, not good for that kind of regular connecting point. But anyway, sorry. Yeah. Go ahead.
No, well, now I'm just going to say that we actually called, it must be getting close to a couple of years ago, but we were looking at a paper route for my eldest, and we were looking at it as like a little job opportunity because there was interest there. And they are no more. It's not an option, which the person I spoke to at the paper, I don't know what her position was, but she also recognized the loss of that. And I'm sure there are pros to that as well, but absolutely what you're saying, like the connection to the people just living around you. And again, it's not a big time commitment as far as like going and spending time with someone and really getting to know them, but that's not always necessary. And so while you were talking, Erin, it was making me think about like how we did get that again. So we lost our dog a year ago. So it's been a year without that. So probably even just having that comparison from having a dog to not having a dog, my kids got to know a lot of our neighbors when we were out walking the dog, especially with the dog, because he was like a happy old golden retriever. So everybody wanted to come and say hi, and he wanted to go see everybody. So a lot of our neighbors probably know the dog's name, the kids' names, and not our names, because it was just a regular connection. It's not completely lost because there's a lot of dog owners around here. So my kids will still connect with a lot of people out walking their dogs. So there is that. But that, again, that's only the people who are out walking. It's just a nice little connection point. There's something else. Oh, the neighbor. Yeah, I know. I shared that story probably in the last episode, maybe. But I was thinking about it again, because that is our next door neighbor that we don't know her really well. Just like a little bit of small talk here and there. But I don't know if I shared this specific part or not, but what I thought was really cool, because I'm thinking about the intergenerational, like just different ages again, is not only did she think of doing that for the kids, bringing over that little like gemstone treasure hunt kit that she made, but I'm pretty sure, I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure what sparked that was her at some point having a little conversation, just because my kids will play out front sometimes, and they'll often, the neighbors will sit outside out front with like their dog in the driveway, and I could hear them talking sometimes. And I think one of my kids, I don't know which one, gemstones got brought up. I'm pretty sure there was a little chat, and knowing my kids, someone probably shared that they had like a little like gemstone collection, and it was just like the neighbor obviously like kept that in mind, or, you know, who knows, maybe she had the idea right away, or maybe the idea came to her later, but it was just neat to observe like this connection between like my kids and her, where they could easily like not engage. They easily not have a conversation, but they did. And it was so cool because it was a shared interest. It wasn't even just that she learned an interest of theirs. She has this interest herself. So that's probably, you know, all the more reason why she decided to do that. And then on top of it, like, and I think I shared this, so I won't go on and on about it, but to have her show up at the door with this offer, like it was so heartwarming. Like it just felt so good. And not only did she take time and effort to put those together for the kids and like strengthen the connection with her, she said to me, you know, if you guys ever need like a night out, or you need someone to like help with the kids, because she is aware that like our families don't live close, you know, she offered to like help out and like help watch the kids or whatnot. So, and like, I think I already knew that like I had people, like even her, even though we didn't know them real well, that I could run over there. I remember even telling the kids when they were little, you know, thinking about an emergency situation, you know, these neighbors, not real well, but their names, you know, their faces, you know how to get to their door, and you know, these neighbors on the other side, you can go over there if something happens, that's who you go to. But it's just different when like she came to the door and did that when she didn't have to, and she had that extra, like that offer as well. It wasn't a lot, right? Like, and she probably thought like, no big deal. But to me, when I shut the door, I was close to tears. Like I was like, oh, Like, that's really nice. She didn't have to do that. It just leaves you feeling good. Will I ever ask her to watch the kids? Probably not. But just the fact that she was open to and willing to, and I think that the kids were right there too. So that was probably really nice, like for them to hear that as well. And then the last thing I wanted to say about like everything we're talking about here with like our neighborhood and local connections, and for my kids, is there like my kids are really comfortable chatting with the neighbors, or just playing, and it doesn't matter the age. So like same here, like it's very, there's a lot of seniors in our neighborhood, but there's a lot more families that have moved in the last like 2, 3 years. So real mix of ages, really young ones, new families, all different ages. And my kids are almost 11 and 8. But it's been a long time now where they're just so comfortable. Oh, can I go talk to so and so? Oh, the dog outside across the street's out. Can I go say hi? And they're comfortable doing that. And that, I know that's not every kid, and that wasn't me when I was a kid. I also didn't grow up in a neighborhood, so I didn't have that same opportunity. The other thing they do, is I'll say like we have one neighbor who I send my one kid with tomatoes to take to that neighbor who we know she really loves tomatoes. So I'll give like as they've gotten older, like little opportunities to be like, oh, can you go deliver this? Or can you go take this to so and so? Or can you go like take their garbage bins and recycling bins back up to the house because it's windier or whatever. And again, really small, simple things. But I don't know. I think it's really helpful for the kids to have those experiences and just grow their comfort and confidence in those opportunities as well.
Yeah, I love the that intergenerational. My kids have that too, and we've talked before about when kids are in school, they can be very like age oriented, and I find that with my kids too. It's interests and connection, not based on age. And it just so happens that my kids are kind of little old souls at heart, I guess. My daughter, her biggest hobby and interest right now is birding. And my son loves kind of like pioneer villages and historic sites. So I think you mentioned earlier, Erin, naturally occurring communities. You said that phrase, and I'm like, that's what I feel like happens when we go to a birding event or a birding station or a conservation area. And we bump into these people who are quite a bit older than her, and yet they're talking, she's learning from them. They obviously have a lot more knowledge. Or sometimes she's kind of right keeping up with them if they're more new to birding, but it's just a hobby or an interest that tends to have an older crowd. But there's this naturally occurring community when you're both at the same conservation area hoping to spot the same bird because it's migrating through, and those types of things. And just seeing her, that comfortability you were talking about with not being like, well, they're an older person, so I can't talk to them. And the same thing with my son at pioneer villages, the people that volunteer at them or work there, he'll just get in long conversations with them, and they're 50 years between them, and they're just chatting away because they're both nerding out about historic stuff. And so that's just so amazing. And then the richness of what those people can pass on, even if it's just seeing yourself in someone older, like a role model, and being like, oh, this is a legitimate hobby or interest that I have, because look at these adults who are participating in it still and who are enthusiastic about it, like I am. So that's so helpful to have those not unintentional, naturally occurring communities where you can seek out events or places that meet your child's interests, that has this built-in network of people there, often intergenerational, that they can really tap into, even if it's for the day or here and there. If you do that throughout the year, then that creates pretty rich community. And it's just, again, that sense, it's the sense that it's there, the sense of belonging, because you've sprinkled that throughout the year for your kids to tap into those little areas where they feel seen and connected with people. Be awesome.
I I love that, Kendall. I wrote something on Instagram the other day. I can't remember what I can't remember what I called it, but it was the idea of these moments of temporary community where you find yourself in, I think for that one, it was more like proximity to somebody, but it could also be proximity and based on a common interest, both. And it's, there is that really cool, especially with wildlife, if you're both, I don't know, you're seeking something out or you're enjoying something at the same time, there is that really, kind of that feeling of like camaraderie that you're both there at the same time. And I just had a couple more practical pieces. I wanted to circle back to something you said at the beginning, Kendall, about like sometimes these things take time. So thinking back to the idea of intentional community, that yeah, if we're showing up somewhere similar time of the week, similar time of the day, we really are more likely to run into people. and I think even if we are wanting to initiate some sort of thing in the community, like something that comes to my mind, I've never initiated this, but something like a community garden or just starting some sort of initiative. I mean, having some patience with that as well, because I think it takes people have to hear an idea a few times before they kind of come around to it, or you know, it people might be interested, but it's not in their schedule. We're such creatures of habit. Like so many times I will hear about something happening in the community and I'll think, well, that would be really cool to tap into, but you know, we do our kind of our regular habit and our regular week. So I just like that you mentioned that, because I do think sometimes we have to be patient as far as kind of how long these things can take to come together. But then the other thing I wanted to just mention is the idea of like local business and how that's kind of a way of connecting with people as well. I don't know. I just find if I'm using businesses relatively close to my house, even people, you know, even sometimes I'll realize that the person working in the store doesn't live that close to me, but they come here for work. But you can tell they've kind of developed a sense of community with the customers that come in. I don't know. There's just something I realized. I was thinking about this the other day. There's something so different about buying something from people who recognize you, and you're not just ringing stuff through on a great big, you know, conveyor belt. Actually having that face-to-face interaction with somebody is, I don't know, it's just like, it just emotionally, mentally feels different. Yeah. I've done that at times. I'll be after something and I'll know I could get it cheaper somewhere else, but it's like the mental experience is not worth it to me, for one thing, to go to like a busier place. I would rather have that face-to-face interaction if I can.
Yeah, that brings to mind for me, like this time of year, we love visiting local farmers markets. And that really is often a lot of the same faces and activities. So at one farmers market we go to, my kids love feeding the goats. So it becomes like we know what we're expecting when we go here. Everybody here is local. Everybody here cares about these delicious fresh vegetables we can get this time of year. There definitely is a sense of community built right into supporting local businesses. Another thing that comes to mind is just my daughter does music lessons. So that is technically a business, but also she's connecting with her instructor and the other instructors. And then a couple times a year when they have music presentations, more like a recital, she's meeting the other students. So, and then we really gotten to know the owners of the academy. And so, yeah, like just another thing that like I think of with community is like just the repetition, like you're talking about going to the same places, seeing the same faces, even if it is purchasing from a business. I think about community that it can be created by just traditionally doing the same things every year, going to the same places. So we go to the same strawberry patch every year. And we literally throughout the year, we'll talk about some of the characters that we just love. Oh, I hope the lady's there who every time says the same joke about, now, are you going to eat strawberries? And then the kids, when they were little, would be like, kind of shaking their head slowly. And then she's like, well, you better. And so like, we still talk about her. And it's just a lady at a farm that we literally see one day a year. And it's a memorable person that you look forward to seeing. We go to the same pumpkin patch every year. And so you're familiar with what you're going to expect there and how the routine works and the owners that work and live on the farm. So definitely even, I think what came to mind, like, there's this quote that's quite popular in the home education world, like, not all classrooms have four walls. And that's what came to mind when I was thinking about all this community stuff, is that these businesses and places like that are running karate, swimming, dance, farmers markets, local farms, whatever you're tapping into, people can really see it as an extension of what they're doing in their home. And it can take some of the pressure off of feeling like we have to be everything and teach everything for our kids. And we can say, like, look at the learning that happens when we go to the hardware store and they're connecting with the owner and we're buying the thing we need. Look at what happens when we meet a new instructor at the violin lessons, knowing the library staff and what their positions are at the library and who to ask if we need a certain thing. So all of these extensions of learning that are out in our community that a lot of people might, you know, not maybe give much credit to, but it's our kids interacting in the community on a daily basis like we do. So it's like they're getting a little step ahead of the game of what does it look like to search for parking? Where do we park in our town? Like all the little things. If we go here, it's always busier. Let's go here. Like, you know, all these little things that they're learning, and all the interpersonal skills that come with frequenting these same places all of the time are really, really enrich their lives into practical life skills. And just that idea that not all classrooms have four walls. It's like seeing the community as the big aid in what you're attempting to do for your kids. That really does matter.
Mm-hmm. I like it. It's like you're partnering with it. The way you describe that, Kendall, it's like you and the community are partnering with content, right? Yeah. Like content and experiences, which is kind of a cool way to think about it. I do have one more practical thing about I guess it's sort of like building and supporting community in a way. It's kind of like something I've been doing lately is kind of thinking about like spot positive community in different ways. And it's just like a little game that I play in my own mind. What I started doing is realizing that sometimes we go places and we take certain things for granted and we don't necessarily realize how much community is actually behind it. So just peeling back a little bit, like the provincial park, actually two of the provincial parks that I really enjoy going to both have, they have a very, very robust volunteer organization that does everything from, visitor experience stuff to educational programs to building accessibility ramps, I think they fundraised to get some of the really thick wheels, like wheelchairs, so that people could access the beach more easily. So, you know, you could go to these places and you could think, oh, you know, that's great that they're supplying these. I think most people probably think that, you know, it's all paid for by the government. But I was surprised to see how many things were actually, the labor had been done by crews of volunteers. The money had been raised by the volunteers, but by accessing community, you know, as ways of organizing things to make money. But at first glance, you just think, oh yeah, this is all kind of set up, but actually there's a huge force of people behind that. And I think that, you know, two of my kids, we've been able to tap into that for specific things. One was the building projects, and the other was the endangered bird piece that one of my kids was involved with. So we're not like regular volunteers there at this point, but it really gave me a look into how dedicated these people are to preserving the land, helping people have, you know, good, positive, accessible experiences. The other thing I wanted to say that I started noticing a little bit in our local library, we have, well, a lot of places do in our province, but we have had for a very long time, a significant population of unhoused people. So, or people that you, I mean, I'm making assumptions. I think the people that I, you know, that I'm speaking about are. And so what I started to notice is the librarians were on a first name basis with a lot of the people because they tend to know them from the library. And there had been some sort of, I've never really looked into what the situation is, but I could see they had worked out a way that they could take out books even without a fixed address. And this seems maybe like a small thing, but I was like, that's really kind of interesting, right? Like just to see that. And it wasn't a big deal. It was just a very matter of fact transaction. It had obviously already been talked about and worked through. And so I think that sometimes we can kind of get steamrolling with the idea that, oh, there's no good community anymore. People are so, but actually, if you look, it's remarkable. You know, community gardens would be another one. Like there are people who are not only using them, but there are people that dreamed those up and brought them to fruition. And I think we can easily kind of get lost in the, oh, everybody's doing their own thing. And like that is true, but also there are these other really cool pieces that we can peel back sometimes and be like, that's actually a bit different than I thought it was.
Yeah, it's making me think about a conversation I actually had with my husband, I don't know how many years ago now, quite a while back, where he was just sharing with me a little bit about how he works for a local city, not the city, we don't live in the city, but he works there. And so there's always people retiring. And he noticed that the people that he got to know that he'd work with, and then they were retiring, there was like a common theme of, which I won't even try to understand this situation because I'm nowhere near it, but this worry or maybe fear or even just discomfort around retiring from full-time work because, you know, they would say things like, what am I going to do? What am I going to, I've worked my, you know, what feels like their entire life, decades of having, you know, maybe if not the exact same routine, a similar routine, a group of people that they would spend time with. And now all of a sudden they're going to have all this open, time and space. And I can kind of understand why, you know, that would be at least uncomfortable. And at the time that my husband was sharing this with me, I was working for a nonprofit organization. And this kind of just, in a sense, baffled me because I was like, well, go volunteer for an organization. That was kind of my first thought because our nonprofit organization, like pretty much all of them, we had a huge volunteer base. Like hundreds of people would volunteer for our organization. And there was absolutely community. And we would talk about it within the organization because we were all involved working towards the same thing. A lot of people, if not everyone, was there because they were passionate about something. And it does just create, like community just comes from that. But because I was in that and I was involved in that, I guess I kind of forgot that if you aren't involved in something like that, which I understand when you're working full time and if you have a family, a lot of times it would be hard to volunteer or maybe like volunteer on a regular basis to find that organization with that community. But I remember thinking like, oh, there's so much need out there that like different like organizations and places, groups, clubs, whatever, are always looking for volunteers. So what a great way to, and I'm sure I just kind of like in my mind, it, like I really simplified it and it's not that easy, but I do think it kind of is like what you're saying, Erin, like there is community and these communities exist. But yeah, I guess it can be easy to just not be aware of them or to miss them or, you know, and then you just might not think about it, which isn't anyone's fault, right? It's just kind of the way it is. But it is like a nice reminder to know that, and there's there's countless areas that it doesn't have to be volunteering for something, but I feel like that is often a good one because you're usually very welcomed and invited to come back because it is, I feel like it's another, I like to find like win-wins, right? And you're helping out a need, but you're also getting something out of it as well, because it's even, you know, just connection, like connection with other people. So I just wanted to mention that.
I love that. Like I often talk about looking for the glimmers and how it brings such gratitude and calmness to my life when I seek out the beauty in something that's ordinary. But I love that, like, not just taking something for granted as, oh, there's a nice ramp, but asking the question, like, who's responsible for that? And recognizing the communities of people that make things happen. And also when you were talking, Ashley, I thought of not minimizing when our kids maybe have a piqued interest in a community that maybe we don't understand. That's something that over the last year, my daughter, we love the podcast Earth Rangers. And they, you know, how on podcasts, and it brought to mind because I'm like, Ashley, like, your organization and others need to, like, be advertising retired question mark. Here's, you know, like, getting out there, tapping into those retired communities. That's such a perfect market for getting people hooked, linked in with those types of things. But I remember, like, I was just, I think my daughter had multiple requests of, oh, I keep hearing on the podcast that there's an app that goes along with it. Oh, okay. Finally, we follow through and get it. And it's been such an amazing community of, it's all online, right? But it's kids all over the world who also like Earth Rangers podcast, but there's all these built-in challenges that do get you literally helping your community, cleaning up the beach, cleaning up the park, doing a lot of eco-friendly things in your own home to make a change. And then you take a photo and submit it and write down what you did for that challenge. And then you can see all of these other kids who have been doing the same thing and earning these badges. And I think that's been really huge for my daughter, who's very eco-conscious and cares about animals in the world a lot, to see, because often day to day, you can feel maybe the stress of not everybody caring that much about those types of things, or you're seeing the effects of things that are concerning to you. So to have this online community and to, like, yeah, she sought that out and made it happen. And also just, yeah, paying attention to when our kids mention something like that, because it's definitely been really enriching for her, and that sense of belonging and connection with others who care about the same thing has been really cool. So yeah, looking for those opportunities and not just letting them pass by is what that was bringing to mind for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, that segues us really nicely. We could probably start talking about homeschooling, right? So I'll just kind of add to that, Kendall. My daughter also, sort of a different situation. It was an in-person group. But it was a lot of the things that they were doing, I think, would kind of be invisible in some ways, right? They were, you know, planting pollinator gardens, helping to weed community gardens. They did these big invasive species removal days, but you wouldn't know that. If you're just driving on the highway and you don't know a lot about it, you're probably not going to notice that a bunch of invasive species just got, you know, removed down the road or whatever. So it is just kind of looking a little bit more deeply at some of those opportunities. And that was another one that I could have missed. That was just something that she saw in a wildlife magazine, and like taking that time to kind of, as you said, with the Earth Rangers, to look into it and actually tap into it. There's a whole bunch kind of behind that door that we don't always know is happening or is going on. So just thinking about, I guess, homeschool community, I think maybe we can figure out kind of how we want to dive into this. One of the things I think we were thinking about is like, how is the broader community helpful to us as home educating families, and kind of what are practical ways for us as families to, you know, support that? Are there things that we wish, are there things that we would be helpful to have more of in the community? And what are some ways that we can dip into that? And I think one of the things that I said that I really appreciated the fact that there are, you know, there's community pools and there's libraries and there are all sorts of places that open their doors to homeschool families. And something that I would love to see, because again, I think a lot of this is rooted in the idea that we would love things to be more accessible to people and more available and just obvious to homeschool families. And I would love to see some of the places in my community. And so a practical thing I could do is actually talk to them about it. but just kind of putting out more of a generic welcome at, you know, so we're at kind of like back to school time and you drive by schools and you see the welcome back signs. So like our local pools have been open to offering swim lessons to homeschool kids, but I think it would be so cool if they would just initiate the invitation. So rather than it always having to be a homeschool parent, call them and say, hey, can we set up lessons? Can we, you know, maybe it doesn't have to be lessons they offer, but maybe it's just like a welcome back swim that they offer. Or maybe it's something as simple as the local library. I don't know, putting out a table with welcome materials and putting something on their website or something in their printed materials that just make it clear that homeschool families are welcome, because I think we know we are. Libraries typically enjoy having us by. But I think there's just something about being more intentional about saying, hey, you know, you might be in the community, you might be thinking about homeschooling, but you might not know anybody else. But here's a, you know, here's a place we're saying welcome homeschool families. What I have found is that the librarians can act as a good connecting point. I know I've had emails from our local librarian on back saying, hey, there's a new family. Do you mind if I give them your contact information? And I think some librarians are going to be more interested in doing that than others, but she was really interested in fostering that sense of connection. So I think that idea of something like a library or even a community, like a sports community center, any number of places, just kind of taking a little bit more of a role of community hub and community connector, I think would be great. Because I think, like, if I'm moving into a new community, I've never homeschooled before, I don't know, it doesn't have to be anything fancy, but just seeing in the literature of a library, a public park, whatever, just welcoming you, it kind of makes you go, they know we exist.
Yeah. It makes me think a little bit about, I think we've talked about this recently, but I'm not sure if the episode's come out yet because they're all jumbled up now because we've been chatting so much, but it makes me think about, just the visibility, right? So we've talked about it, or I think we've talked about it. I know I've definitely thought about how we don't often see homeschool kids or homeschool families in kids' books that we read or kids' shows or any movies or shows. Like, there's just not, there's not a lot of visibility. And I think, like, that's what's coming to mind when you talk about this. And I don't think I've actually thought about how, like, it could be so simple. And the library would be a library or, like, community center, like a really public space where a lot of people are coming and going, like just a table or even like on their, you know, the places that still have like bulletin boards or something, just some, yeah, recognition that we exist would feel good. But also I think, like, yeah, absolutely, I feel welcomed in our local, any library I go into, you know, if it's a school day, I don't, like, that's one of the spaces we go into that I don't even think about how, oh, it's school time, because that just seems like a welcoming, accessible space as a homeschooler, I think. But if they had a table display or a bulletin board or something specifically for homeschoolers, or like even like school kids and homeschool kids or something, I feel like that would be enough for me to like spark up a conversation. Like that would, I'd probably, you know, I wouldn't wait in line to talk to the librarian about it, but as we were just walking by, I'd probably be like, hey, like, and, you know, start a little conversation about that, which, I mean, I obviously could just do that anyway without that, but I don't often. It's just if they bring it up usually. So it could just be something simple that would feel good, and there would be other spaces. And I think too, I think you mentioned this, Erin, but like the benefit of, like, I'm constantly messaged and I see it in our local like homeschool Facebook groups. Like, there's so many parents, especially parents of young children who have not yet started school, but absolutely parents as well who have kids already in school that are very curious and very interested about homeschool, and they don't know where to go. They don't know where to find that information. I mean, I think it is a bit easier now. Like, you can go online, and I think a lot of places have local homeschool Facebook groups. So I guess maybe I'm wrong in saying that, but you know, sometimes it's not just about joining a Facebook group and all of a sudden you get all the information, right? Like that's just kind of maybe your first step. But if there was like a spot at the library, or even if, yeah, the librarian doesn't know a lot about it, they can pass on some contact information, or even just say, oh yeah, we have homeschool families that come in here and there's, you know, a group of them that meet at this day and time. Like it just, that, because it's one thing I think about because of the messages I do get, and I remember how I felt before we homeschooled, is it can be a little bit hard. It's like, where are the homeschoolers? You know they're there, but unless you, I mean, we don't walk around with t-shirts saying I homeschool or whatever, right? So it would also, I think, be helpful for people who you know, are actually wanting some more information about homeschooling, and then also just for people who haven't had the opportunity, like I didn't know any homeschoolers before we started homeschooling, so I'm just thinking like, other people could walk into the library and be like, oh, what's this about? Oh, I didn't really think we had many homeschoolers. Just to like increase awareness too, I think when that happens, then home education, just it will become more accessible as well.
Yeah, on a bit of a hopeful note, a few libraries in our surrounding area have a dedicated homeschool get together meetup time, and it is quite open-ended. It's like board games, bring a snack, and maybe sometimes they'll have an activity out, like one of their robots or something. So that's really good. Like I think me and my kids are a little beyond that from years and years of building community, but for those first-time people, like you're saying, that they I started a Facebook group quite a few years ago, that so many parents come in, especially August, like that sort of like, we're thinking of this, but we don't know what we're doing. So I have different places I send them for some of those like FAQ type questions. But so that's a hopeful note. And then we have actually a business in a city nearby that does have a lot of programming for homeschoolers. And I feel like that being a business, and them having, that's building awareness in that downtown area, because now some of the surrounding businesses, like art creation type places, indoor playgrounds, they're literally having in their literature, kind of like you're saying, Erin, like visibility of this is designated or specifically for homeschool people, because they see that market of the, you know, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. We can make something for these kids. They're at home. Like let's tap into that time slot that we have. So I am seeing it more and more in our area. So that's really heartening. But for so many years, creating community stuff has been very DIY for myself and my kids. And we utilize the library, for example, like their community room. For a few years now, we've been doing a reading club through the winter months, because my kids loved the summer reading club through the library so much. So we would do it all ourselves. And then we'd end with this, you know, all the kids that were involved would track their reading for a few months, and we'd end with a celebration of reading party at the library community room. So we'd have 40, 50 kids in and out of there. So like kind of like trailblazing, creating our own visibility. But I love the idea of having a little hub or a bulletin board or something for that community. But yeah, it's a lot online now. And for instance, this fall, like we're going to be doing forest meetups with anyone who wants to come. But a different trail each week, you know, through to December or however the weather takes us. But a lot of like DIY, like we like the forest, do you too? Come meet us on this day and this time at a different trail each week. Like a lot of, build your own community around those things you're interested in. They're usually things my kids are excited about. So then I'll put the effort into making them happen. But I love to, you know, again, I love doing that to create that community and create those friendships for my kids. So it is a lot of build your own adventure when it comes to the homeschooling world, if there's not all these things you can tap into so easily yet. Mm-hmm. But a little bit of hope in our area that people are catching on a bit, and maybe the numbers are up, and so they're seeing it as more, and people are more visible or more vocal about it maybe as time goes on, like not being ashamed anymore. Because I feel like this time of year is when you start to get the questions from the strangers at the grocery store of why you're not in school. And I feel like, I think people are getting more and more confident with being like, yep, be homeschool, deal with it. It's awesome. So like, as more and more people are getting confident in it being a good option and not kind of the alternative option, like as more of like a, we're choosing it right. And a lot of families choosing it right from the beginning, JK, SK, not just coming to it out of necessity for reasons such as bullying or reasons such as, you know, academic issues later, but like coming right into it as this is the option that's best for our family, and we're pretty confident in that. So I think there's a shift happening. I see a little a bit of changes since we started.
Mm-hmm. And I should say too, just to be supportive of my library, they have been great about having homeschool get-togethers for years. So it's not, I just want to say that because I might made it seem a little, they've like really, really trying, at times more, I would almost say at times more than the homeschool community was responding. So yeah. I don't want to suggest that those opportunities haven't been there. And that's been kind of cool too, because I can remember one time I was trying to find a book for my son, and I guess it must have been really sought after. And the librarian, one of the key librarians that we knew, heard I was looking for it and like found me across the library and said, stop by tomorrow, I can give you my personal copy, because he was so, you know, like that kind of relationship was there. So I do want to say that yes, I think libraries are really open to doing that. And sometimes maybe it's a matter of getting the word out a little bit. But also our local YMCA too, amazing, you know, for 2 decades has been having these phys ed classes, and they were also actually open to even a whole other day. And again, maybe this is something to acknowledge. I think sometimes the homeschool community can be a bit challenging to serve because they're kind of like, yeah, we're offering space, we're saying this. But for a number of reasons, sometimes that doesn't work out very well. So I think that can be challenging for the location offering the space and time and potentially programming. And it can also be frustrating for people that are in organizing positions. You know, I've been in that situation too, Kendall, where you're liaising a little. Is that the word? You're the liaison. I'll put it that way. And it's a little bit of a back and forth to make that kind of all come together. So that's another practical thing that I think that I think people are going to have different opinions about this, not necessarily among us, but generally speaking. But something that I did try pretty hard to do was, I mean, obviously I'm not going to put my child through anything uncomfortable. I'm going to be listening to their preferences. That said, there's a certain reality to people. I think if we're really, really individualistic, it's fine, but we can't be surprised if it's hard to get community going. Let me put it that way. Because, you know, I know a number of the times that I would be organizing things and it does get challenging when people pull out a lot. And as a parent, you understand it, but it's also, I do think there's a little bit of tension there in the home education world between individually recognizing our children's needs and preferences and being part of the bigger collective. I think it's, I just think we need to be aware of that.
I'm experiencing exactly that right now. I feel like I'm at a bit of a personal tipping point with having started this group and wanting to see it keep going, and then seeing my kids get to this more middle childhood age where they've formed the connections that were the reason that we put all this time and effort into trying to build something. So shifting into making sure that what we do with community and with groups is a great fit for them. Perfect example is I've thrown a not back to school party for quite a few years in a row now. And this year I actually asked another mom with younger ones who's been great at creating events and activities for the community since she's been involved. I said, hey, can you take over the not back to school party if you're interested? And she ran with it and did great, because that particular event was so many new faces and people coming out looking to me for questions, connections, me trying to connect people with each other, which I loved doing, but might not have been the perfect fit for my kids anymore. they love to kind of know who's going to be there and want to spend our free time with the connections we've already made. But so anyway, yeah, definitely that balance between, does it need somebody to keep it going? Because the homeschool community ebbs and flows so much, people come and go, to keep it going, and not maybe taking that full pressure on yourself, keeping your kids first and what they're interested in for sure. It's definitely a balance. And maybe that's why homeschooling communities come and go and ebb and flow, because the parents are keyed into what's the best fit for their family. And when that's no longer servicing a whole group and keeping a big community going, then so a bit of a passing the torch on to someone else with a similar mindset, who's still wanting to put the time and effort into different types of things than you are because of the age of their children and all that.
Yeah, no, I think about this quite a bit. And Kendall, I wonder, like, because where I am, I've thought about that. I think we've talked about this, but I don't know what, maybe it was one of the other community episodes we talked about early on, but that passing of the torch. And I've thought, like, well, why does that not seem to be, I mean, maybe it is, and hopefully it is happening in certain situations where I live and I'm just not part of it, so I don't see it happening. But it certainly doesn't seem to be a common thing I'm hearing about where I am. I think, I'm sure where you live, it makes a big difference. And I know you've grown like a really big community, Kendall. So I'm wondering, like, because that makes sense, right? But if you're like in a small community or in a community with just like a smaller group of homeschoolers or less homeschoolers, I can see why that's harder, because you just don't all know one another maybe, and it's spread out. And, you know, if it's, it seems to be like pockets of homeschoolers where I am. So then there's just less people to have the opportunity to pass the torch onto. And I see in our Facebook group, people talk about this, like newer homeschoolers will be looking for like, you know, the local gymnastics place to put on homeschooling. And then, and someone will come in and say, I organized all of that a couple years ago, but interest, you know, because of lack of interest, eventually it wasn't offered anymore. But encouraging, like, go talk to them again, because they were open to doing it before and we ran it, but people weren't going. So, you know, kind of what you're talking about, Erin, like, if you're not using it, then it, they're not going to keep offering it. I mean, that does just make sense, I think, in most cases. But maybe in like Kendall, like your community, maybe the size makes a difference, and there's certainly enough people, like people who would be like, I can't, or I'm not interested in taking that on. But with more people, maybe there's more likely to be. So I'm like, I guess my hope is that as there's like more and more home educating families, that will start happening more. Because like, I think about you and other people I know who've put in so much time, energy, and effort. And I'm sure like you and your family have gained so much from it, and so have other families. So it's of course not like a waste or anything like that, but I'm sure you would love to see it carry on, because it'd be great for all other families. Like, you know, there's going to be so many families coming that are looking for exactly that. So my hope is that like there, it will be more common, I guess, that there will be someone willing to be like, oh, I can take that on. And even if it's only for like that year, but then maybe there's someone else. Cause I know you've spent so many years taking that on too. And maybe not everybody can do it for as long, but maybe like to bridge till the next person can take it on for a longer amount of time. But
yeah. And one way we, you know, set up the group right from the beginning was that it was more of a hub for all parents to utilize it as a platform, like a big bulletin board, right? To plan, like it's right in the statement of like, this is a group not run by me exclusively, but please utilize this platform to create events or ask people if they want to join in something you and your kids are doing. So that's always been the kind of idea behind it. And I do see people doing that. And I think we were talking earlier about leaving a sense of space for these opportunities of community to not just rush past them. I'm hoping that in me taking a little step back and passing the torch a little bit more in an official way to another mom who's quite keen to take it over on more of like the moderator type level, just doing these little shifts, and then that space is left for more people to start planning things that are a good fit for their kids. And yeah, so just trusting it and not tying any ego to it. Like, it's nice to hear you say those things about recognizing the years of commitment to something, but I have to like not look at it as a failure, because like you're saying, we gained all these friendships and wonderful memories out of it. And so yeah, it's not about me, it's about everything that was created out of it. So it has, things take their natural course as well. And I loved this conversation because it really, this is kind of where we're at with my kids, is the they've shifted into really participating in things in the community now that they're not that younger age. And so like looking at it as more free time for them to pursue their hobbies and interests with other people who are passionate about similar things in the community at large. And it doesn't have to be exclusively home educators anymore. So I just have really benefited from thinking on this topic.
Mm-hmm. And I'm also thinking that along those lines of like passing the torch, or if there's a gap between people, I think that if you can partner, we definitely had this happen at our local community center that was offering a lot of, not just sports programming, they were offering, trying to think like leadership, I think leadership groups and just different things like that. I think that, you know, if we're organizing something, or even if we're just participating in something, really developing rapport with that other person at the organization who's doing signups or registrations, then, you know, if you step down a little bit, there's room, like that's what we found. There were people that knew not only the people, like not only if we were helping set it up, they knew lots of the families. So there was this real partnership with them that they could kind of keep it running a little bit as somebody new came in, and they knew people well enough that, kind of like I said about the librarian contacting me about whether, you know, people could email me. Similar things happened with the sports place as well, where they would notice a family coming in and they would know people well enough to kind of make some of those connections. So that's where I think that, like, you're not just kind of living in this bubble with your homeschool group and you're using their space, you're actually partnering with them so that everybody's kind of, you know, in it together. I think that happened with like skiing and snowboarding as well, that somebody really took that on for a period of time. But then over a certain number of years, the person at the registration table kind of knows how it goes. So if somebody new comes in, there's a little bit of wiggle room there. And I also just wanted to say, and Kendall, I don't know if it's maybe a little bit different from what you're referring to, but we would, over time, we connected with sort of a few families that we had things in common with, that it didn't need to be the type of thing where you had a big group going, so you needed numbers, or you needed, and sometimes it could even be like outside of school hours. So it would be, let's do this on a Saturday, or let's go to the show or whatever in an evening, so that you're getting together with families, but it's not the organization really is just, hey, what, you know, the kids would like to do this, and you're going somewhere where you're not, it's very different from doing like a school program at a museum or something like that. It's almost easier to go to like a public open doors day and just all go.
Yeah.
Then, you know, and so, but the thing with that is that you, I think you almost need to have been in community long enough to meet those people. So it's a little bit of a, I don't know, it's a bit of a stepping stone, that initial step can still be hard.
Yeah. And then in the back of my mind, of course, as people come and go, it's like the long-term plan. Like I've seen friends come and go. And so wanting to keep the community going for personal reasons too, to just maintain a friendship base for my kids as well and myself. But yeah, definitely shifting into, we have a Halloween party planned, we're going to the beach coming up, which is so fun to go to the beach in September. These quite casual forest meetups, doesn't, it's not anything like academic or I'm taking money and I need I need to be in connection with the museum or be the liaison, is becoming a better fit for us now that we have this group of friends. But that long-term thinking of maintaining the group and maintaining numbers of friendships as well, definitely quality over quantity. But I feel like maybe you guys relate to, in the homeschooling world, things change, people come and go, people move. So it's all those things in mind, but I'm definitely, yeah, like shifting out of maybe for a little bit that role of being the money taker, the signer-upper, all those things, and shifting into the more that casual, more casual meetups for fun, for connection, for community in a different way.
I think one of the things that had been on my mind was around the idea of homeschool community as kids get older and get into the high school years. And I think for us, that was particularly useful, is to move away from, because as kids get older, they often have different schedules, right? Work schedules, they might be taking courses, whatever. And so just finding a few key people to do things of their choice with was really helpful. It just didn't feel like, and it was also a time, it was a period of time where I wanted to tune in again to their needs. I mean, we're always looking at our kids' needs, but the needs became quite specific again. So, I would say in the earlier years of our homeschool community, it was very community oriented to the degree that we would have these planning meetings. And I don't know, there was a little bit of an assumption that you kind of would do everything. And not everything, but there was like, okay, so what do we, it wasn't so much like, here's an event and you sign up. We were deciding as a group. So we've just done, you know, these two outdoor activities this month. Do we want to look for something here? And I quite liked it in the sense that it was extremely community oriented. It was really about the whole. But yes, the challenge is that not everything is going to be a fit for everybody. So I did find that once we got past the age that it was just kind of exciting to be running around with other kids and they didn't even really care where they were. You know what I mean? Like, they could be wherever, but if there's a chance to run around, you know, as they got older, they were more discerning about what they wanted to do, how they wanted to spend time. And that made more sense to zero in on those specific things. Then, so I do think that community changes over time as well.
I wonder / worry about that / excited about that time, of course, but I think about that more and more as my kids get older, and we're definitely not there yet, but I can start to see it with my oldest one a little bit. Still really happy to just kind of run around and play with other kids. But I don't know how much longer that will be the case realistically. I mean, it depends on personality too, but I'm very curious about places where there is like a lot of high school aged or teenagers that are homeschooling, because from what I can tell where we are, I mean, there's not many. And a lot of what I do hear is kids going into school for the first time or back to school once they are close to high school or at high school age. And it seems to be, I'm hearing a little bit that parents are probably thinking ahead of this like I am. And it seems, and I don't have a lot of experiences like hearing from a lot of people, but like parents are getting their kids into school before high school, thinking starting in school at high school might be extra challenging. I'm really not sure. We are not there yet, but I think about, you know, finding other teenagers if my kids don't, you know, like I'm thinking about like the homeschool kids that they know now, if they do go into school, I'm going to be back to, okay, where do we find people? And I see it again in the Facebook homeschool group. That's my insight. People looking like, oh, I've just, you know, my 14-year-old has just left school and we're homeschooling for the first time. We're looking for connections. And it is different than when it's parents setting up, you know, play dates or meetups in the forest or the park meetups and stuff. Not to say that that's always easy, but the kids kind of, for the most part, are happy to go along and do that. And that's very different for teenagers. So, I don't really have a lot to say about it, but I'm wondering about what that's going to look like for us quite a bit as the kids get older. And I hope to like have an opportunity sooner rather than later to hear from some other homeschool families, even if it's not where we live, like somewhere else where it looks quite different for them, and just how they navigated that and what that looked like. Because I just think, like, oh my gosh, if we get to the point where, you know, the kids are going into school just because that's kind of the only way, not the only way, but there is something to, I think, especially some like really social teenagers, of course, like there's always going to be like sports they could get into or different clubs. Like, it's not the only way for them to be with other kids or other teens. But it is a lot. It's a big chunk of time that the other kids would be in school. And my one kid is quite social. So yeah, I'm just wondering about that quite a bit lately.
Yeah, it might end up being one of those things like that's more reflective of adult relationships, where in our free time, we might have a handful of good friends, quality over quantity. And so maybe you'll be that parent in the group saying, hey, I got a 14-year-old, here's what he's into. And one or two other people in the same position, you can meet up on a mutual interest and just see if it's a go. If it's not, it's not. But yeah, like, if you've seen those lone parents out there, then they're there, and it's not like you're needing to replace what would be school 400 peers in their cohort or whatever. You're just looking to connect. I know quite a few people in our immediate area in the high school level. And also there's a factor of it's not as, they're okay. They've always known stratified age groups, you know? And so there's not the cool factor of, oh, there's a few people there 10 and under or whatever, I can't enter, you know, it's just all they've ever known. So it's a little more seamless. And a lot of those kids are choosing home educating still, and don't, that's another factor. If your kid's wanting to go, that's a whole other thing. These kids are fine with continuing a similar lifestyle that they've always known because they're choosing it too. That's something I've noticed as well. And like you're saying, all of those things that they can get connected with that are their personal hobbies and interests, even if the connections there have an age differential, you know, then they probably are fine with that, because it's not this, I think a lot of people get afraid of the high school level thinking they need same age peers, and it is important, but maybe not as important as we think. And if they're connecting over interests in common through a club or through a hobby, then it's about their maybe level of happiness and contentment. Mm-hmm. And so often that's not present in kids in the public system, high school or whatever. Like, yes, they've got all the friends and they're not weird, like they're not doing something countercultural, but are they happy? Are they content? Are they? So it's really questioning all of those norms, just because I think as parents, we feel all that pressure all of a sudden that the age has changed. We've shifted into a new dimension. We have new eyes on us. Oh, it was okay for you to home educate when your kid was 14 and under, but what makes you think you could do high school or whatever? Or what makes you think you can step outside of that norm? So maybe it'll just flow and feel more natural than we're kind of anticipating it will. And Erin, you have experience, so we can look to people like you to see if it flowed a little bit more naturally. And some of yours went in. And so if they're requesting that, that's a whole different thing, right?
Yeah, my one guy did. Yeah. I think exactly what you're saying, Kendall, there's such a difference between kids. So for some kids that will be very, you know, important, and maybe they take a different avenue with it. But yeah, I think there's no question. I do see more and more as well that there is this kind of mass exodus but the interesting thing is there's also sometimes a mass entry point at high school is the other thing that I've noticed, is that people just find that high school isn't working for them, or maybe even a couple years before. So I also think that's kind of an interesting thing, that there's a little bit of a swap at times. Something that I found, because I think what you're also referring to, Ashley, is like if you have a child who's wanting those connections, which I did as well, because I do think that what happens sometimes is that there's this, kids want, they want maybe to do something different. They want to switch it up a little bit. They are older. They're looking maybe for more kind of just kind of a different type of interaction that they've had, but they maybe don't want to go to school. Mm-hmm. And so it's like where that to me is definitely a bit of a gray area right now for a lot of parents, that there are kids who are clear they want to go to school. And so that's the clarity. And then there are kids who are clear they want to stay at home. And similarly to what you're saying, Kendall, they're able to fill their cup in a variety of ways. It doesn't have to be this huge number of friends that we think we all need to have or that kids need to have. But there is like this other sort of, I don't know, kind of holding ground to me there where kids are wanting something different, but yeah, the numbers aren't there. One of the things that I did find helpful a little bit was just to shift. I'm going to see if I can explain this. So I started offering small group. So for example, I did a small group book study, and I did that with a couple of my guys and a few other kids. Often it was like four of them, like a couple of other guys. And I have to say they weren't necessarily, my one son, yes, but not, maybe not the other three or four kids. I wouldn't say that you would look at these kids and go, you know what, book study. That's probably not the first thing. But I also think that what happens is there can be, like, when kids aren't together by, I'm going to say by force, but in school you're together, you're put in a class, there you are. It's a little bit more awkward sometimes to connect with new people when there isn't like an anchor point that school does provide. So I started sort of offering pieces, and I tried to do it in a way that was very conducive to them, right? It was very them flavored. So, you know, we would do it. There was like a basketball court and a skate park there. And it was very much like we would plan this chunk of time together, and they would skateboard and they would come in and we would get a study room. And we just kind of did this, and there was no, like nobody was bringing assignments or anything. It wasn't like they had to do something to do it. It was just something that we did together. And I did something a little bit similar with my daughter. It wasn't quite the same thing, but in a few of her friends. And what I found worked, and you know, the moms would talk about this, and my daughter and I would talk about it as well. What worked well for them was meeting somewhere. So we would do like mini golf, or sometimes it may be like a movie, something where there was like an event, but it wasn't like you're getting these new kids together and they all have to find something in common. Right. So sometimes I think the need was to be away from the parents. So in the book club, I just picked those kids up where they got dropped off, that they needed to move away from the moms are all getting together. And like, we needed to move away from that. And that need in them was clear. So we were just like, you know, I'll kind of offer this anchor point, but they were very independent in other ways beyond that. But with my daughter, I would say it was different. It was helpful for them to have kind of like the moms get together. So it was like a common activity, but the pressure was off of, because I do think school offers that. They're there, and so you kind of have to interact, but it can be hard to do that. It can be hard to make those connections otherwise. So those are a couple of things I found helpful, but I would also say that I think one of the benefits to most of our focus on community was in person rather than online. And I think online can be a great way to, I mean, online is a great way for so many reasons to connect, but I think what, if we're talking today about practical in-person community, what I liked about in-person is you really know you get to know the person. And so if they're different than you in any number of ways, I don't know. I feel like online we've gotten very siloed and very insular, I think is the word I'm trying to say, where we are kind of in our own echo chambers. And then we're looking for our same kind of people to hang out with all the time. And I think the benefit to in-person community is that you kind of need each other and you will overlook some of those things. So a lot of even the ability that I had to work outside the home was because I didn't really worry all the time about whether the other parent was somebody I would want to be best friends with. And in the end, it turned out I did form friendships with these people. But I think I shared that with you, Ashley. One of my very best, I mean, we were back and forth. She took care of my kids. I took care of her kids. I wouldn't have picked her out of the crowd to begin with. It just, and I feel like it's a little bit old fashioned that way. You get along with people because you live close to them, and you can overlook things sometimes because you kind of get to know the heart of the person and you learn from one another. But I do feel like that's a little bit of the danger of the online world right now, is that everybody's like, these are my people. And you even hear, meet like-minded, you know, it's great to meet a like-minded group of people. It is great to meet a like-minded group of people. And also there's very little growth. Right? So that's kind of something that comes up for me. And I think when my kids were teens, I really had to move past that because I needed to take their needs into consideration, not whether I always loved hanging out with the other parent or whether I wished that they would pick their kid up on time. I overlooked a lot because I just really wanted to, I think that's maybe where we talk about really intentional community. And it was like sometimes quite a few deep breaths. But
I'm going to give us a little bit of credit for our echo chamber because, because I think we're doing something so countercultural that we do grow a lot from each other. I totally agree with what you're saying, but it would have me reflecting on, okay, the communities I'm part of and especially online communities. But I feel like the difference is all of our neighbors, the status quo is you put your kids in school and I'm going to question you at the grocery store and I don't even know you. And so we need the camaraderie of this is why we're doing it. And we're all so different. And I think we do really grow and learn from each other because of what you're saying just now, Erin, that you were very specific to your kids' needs and our kids are all so different that we end up doing things so differently from each other. And we can learn from that and lean on that when we're going through something hard with our own kids, because there's these common threads. It might not be the exact same situation, but it's this humanness to parenting, to following your child's lead, all of these things. Anyway, so give us a little bit of credit that we're not just over here preaching to the choir, but bolstering each other in such a strange thing that we're choosing to do, a countercultural thing.
Mm-hmm. And I think echo chambers are important sometimes. We all need, as you said, Kendall, when we're out there doing something completely different, we do need to find our people. There's 100% a place for that. I think when we're thinking about giving our kids as much chance as possible and ourselves as much chance as possible for community, it's just that other piece to it. But I agree with you. I do think we need to give ourselves credit and everybody in the larger community. We're all trying to, you know, paddle through something that's really different.
Yeah, I almost wonder if it's a little bit of a natural journey or natural growth with homeschooling. And this would obviously depend on like when you start homeschooling and how old your kids are. But and I can just kind of speak from my experience, not that we've been on it long enough to really know what it'll be like when my kids are teenagers and older. But I think like you can leave those echo chambers once you've been in them. Like once you have a sense of belonging, you have your people, then that kind of builds your confidence and your comfort. And like, you've been validated in your beliefs and your thoughts. And then you can insert yourself in different communities and be maybe more okay. And we all get that from different ways. But I was thinking the same thing with what you shared, Kendall, around a lot of the times anyway, when you start homeschooling, it does kind of feel like you're already doing something so different and you're like looking for your people. And I think you can kind of get a little stuck. And I think I kind of did. I felt like I really needed to, I think we tried some different homeschool groups and I was like, well, that really didn't work. That really didn't work. And I'm like, I've already left for our experience. We already left the school system because it wasn't working great. Or maybe I should say we didn't go back to it because it was during the pandemic. We didn't go back to it because we didn't feel like it was working in the first place. So then to get to like, you know, a community or a group of people who are like, well, that's really not working. So it was about finding where it was going to work for us. And that was going to be with like-minded people, especially I think when your kids are younger, maybe. And I haven't talked about this before, so I'm kind of thinking out loud, but when I'm in a group of people and my kids are younger, the other homeschool parents are involved a little bit more in helping with the kids. And I think like for me, it was important that my children in the spaces they were in were really respected and, you know, the space was safe for them to be in. And sometimes it just didn't work for those reasons. But as our kids get older, and they can like stand up for themselves, advocate for themselves, they just don't need the like as close supervision and whatnot when all, because that's when like the parenting situations clash, like what clash, like one kid's climbing a tree and some parent, you know, that parent of that kid is totally fine with it. And another parent's being like, you need to come down. That's so dangerous. And then you're like, ah, and I'm not saying that that's a reason to not stay involved in that homeschool group or community, but I think maybe, and I'm sure there's still times with older kids or teenagers that this could still be something that parents encounter, but they're just like you were saying, Erin, like they need that space from the other adults and parents as well. So maybe then the parents kind of being on the same page or being like-minded matters a little less because the kids are more independent and if they're getting along, you know, if our kids are getting along and it works for them, then, you know, we can connect as much as we want or as little as we want. And again, I hope I'm not simplifying it too much, but I'm just kind of like, as I'm thinking about this, kind of like this natural growth, or I don't know if it's growth, but just like how it can shift and change. I wonder as our kids get older, when it comes to just thinking about our kids in community with other people and how that can look different. And it's hard for me to think about because I'm not there yet, but I'm listening to you talk a little bit about that, Erin, like a lot of that made so much sense. And I can see like so many like great things about that. And it's a good reminder too, because sometimes we can be like, oh, it's so hard. And when is it going to get a bit easier or whatnot? And I'm sure, you know, that stage has its own challenges and whatnot too, but some things as far as like kids connecting around similar interests, or like you were giving great examples of like anchor points, which I don't mean to be going on and on, but I did also want to say, it made me think again about how, like what you said about like the book study or the book club or like going and doing an event. Again, that's what I think adults often do when they get together with people they don't know. And I think we talked about this in like the earlier, like episode 3 about building or like choice in education. We were talking about community in that one. I think we talked about how when people retire and people who are seniors and they join clubs, like they have that anchor that what you were talking about. But of course, like teens, a little bit trickier, maybe, like that's not already happening there. It's another example of it's not happening for homeschool things. Like that's, we know that as a society or as a community that seniors look for opportunities to get together, and different places offer. I mean, I see it a lot in our community where there's opportunities advertised, I guess, for it doesn't even say like an age. There's not an age attached to it, but you know that it's for like the retired community. That's not being offered to homeschooled teenagers. So, you know, it is kind of on the teens themselves or their families and their parents to kind of, it sounds like, that's what you noticed, Erin. And so you were able to find a way. And I appreciated you saying that you wouldn't look at the kids necessarily and think, oh, book club, because I'm like, what will my kids be interested in? Right. But it, not that it doesn't matter what it is, but it's just like, if it's something that they can come together and connect on, and then whatever comes from that, like you mentioned, like there's opportunities to go like outside and play basketball or skateboard, then they could go do that. So.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, Kendall, you were talking about like, you know, connecting based on interest, and it doesn't always have to be, excuse me, that it's another homeschool kid or even somebody their own age. But I was thinking that those shared interests, even kids of the same age, it's a little bit different, I find, when you get to the high school age, because sometimes kids are like, I'm just thinking of my son's basketball. None of those kids, well, I mean, most of them wouldn't have all been at the same high school anyway. So I think too, as kids get older, they their hours change. Like, they're often able to stay up pretty late at night. So things like, you know, sports or music events or something later in the evening are not such a big deal. And so something like that, you're meeting kids that kind of doesn't matter where they go to school. Like, it's not, you know, they've done their thing, you've done your thing during the day. So it's not to say that the socializing always has to happen during the day. And what we found by that age, there's a lot of parents that aren't particularly involved with their kids by that age, like non-homeschool parents. And so there were a lot of people who were quite happy to, like, for me to offer their kids a ride home and be like, you know, we would go for a bite to eat after, or the donut shop. Like, they were like, sure. Whose mom are she? Sure, whatever.
Yeah.
So we also have this idea that everybody's like parenting the way that we are. And like, I found once we got to the high school years, there were a lot of parents that were just like, sure, just be in by 11. Like, they didn't care who I was. And so I would offer kids rides home if I noticed that the kids connected with them, and it would just expand their time together a little bit. I just wanted to really quickly, I know we've been chatting quite a long time. I think when we talked about stewing, we kind of finished with some like low cost opportunities. And I think that when we're talking about sort of like accessibility to home education and community opportunities, are there ones that come to mind for either of you around low cost? I mean, I know we've talked a lot about library. That's obviously free. But just, I think, helping people to understand what are some of the accessible places that, that people can go and meet people. And I think I mentioned the fact that, again, I think community can be really good for allowing people to do some paid work if you've gotten to know somebody well enough to kind of trade off a little bit.
Yeah, I kind of go back to what I was thinking about earlier, where you can create accidental community by traditionally going to the same places either seasonally, annually, or even weekly. So like, even thinking about anything you do in your life as being like, oh, if we go to that pumpkin patch every year, that creates a sense of community in that it mimics community, in that it's familiar, it's safe, we know about it, we know some of the faces we'll see there. So I mentioned like farmers markets, going to the same strawberry picking patch, the same pumpkin patch, festivals going on in your town, like our Christmas parade. That really feels like the sense of community. It's free. You see, we often stand on in the exact same spot every year. And so we're like waiting to see the familiar faces that we know also love that spot and know about that sneaky parking spot. And the people coming through the parade, it's quite same every year. So any of these touch points that are very familiar, the same every year, or that you go to traditionally, that don't have to cost anything at all. I'm a very seasonal person. So even like, we go apple picking every year. We go to a local park to rake leaves, because although we have beautiful trees, they're all walnut trees. They blow into our back field. And so we go to a park that has these maples to have the whole experience of jumping in the pile. And people always stop and wonder what we're doing. Do we work for the park? It creates a lot of opportunity for people walking by in the path to be like, what on earth are you doing here? But that's a very, like, it's just creating those cyclical things that your kids look forward to that give that sense of ownership and belonging in your space, and them understanding the touch points throughout your year that just give all of the same benefits of community, even if the people along the way are a little bit different each time. So that's what it brought to mind for me.
I love that idea of going to a whole other park, Kendall. That must be
so fun. Yeah.
Bring your own rake.
Yeah, exactly.
I was thinking back like of what we've tapped into, or even just what I see other like local homeschoolers tap into. And I'm pretty sure the first thing we got involved in that was completely free, it was just one mom at the time. I think just another, it's just one mom organizes like a weekly hike. And I don't know how I even found out about it first. Probably the homeschool Facebook group was just posted there, I would think, or maybe I ran into someone and they mentioned it. But it was a weekly hike, and the location, I mean, would always change. Sometimes they'd go back to the same trail or whatever. And it was just kind of like, it would be different people, but sometimes people would commit to it and go weekly. And it went, I think it went from like September to June, but now actually it might keep going all the way through. It's a different person who organizes it. And it's great because you don't, if you don't go 1 week because someone's sick, that's okay. You can go the next week. Like, you don't have to commit to it, but it seems like there's enough like group of people that you know you can go and there will be people, which I thought was good because that doesn't always happen. And then the other thing we tapped into was park meetups where people would just post it in a homeschool group, usually to get it started. Or if like numbers started to dwindle, they might start posting it again and people would show up at the park. That didn't work as well for us for a few different reasons. It really slowed down in the colder months in the winter. I could see like how hikes, like weekly hikes would work better year round because you're moving, so you're staying more warm. Whereas standing around, I mean, the kids would still be moving around at the park. I think it was mostly the growing ups who would stand there and their toes would get cold. But that was another like completely free opportunity to get together. And even if just like, you connected with like one or two families, then that was worth it. And swimming for us. So that's not free, but I think it costs us $7 right now if I take me and my two kids swimming. And that's actually been neat because that's how we've kind of just like met other homeschool families. But like not a lot, it's never crowded. So there's maybe like one or two other homeschool families that are there we can meet. And it's a great like intergenerational example too, because there's the retired people that go and now they're used to seeing our kids. And then of course, like the lifeguards and stuff that are there too. So we've got like a little sense of community there, and that's offered for us through, the Boys and Girls Club. It's not homeschool specific, obviously, but, it's like middle of the school day. So it's perfect. And then the last thing I wanted to mention for like, again, it's not free, although, I mean, I guess you could. The only reason this isn't free really is because what we call forest school, so I've talked about it on here before, is more so like a, like I'd call it like a nature co-op. It is definitely like in a forested area, and we often will have like a fire, and kids will play in the forest, and there's like a little creek, but there's also a building. It's kind of like a hall. So it has like an open space for inside, which is great for when it's raining or whatever. There's washrooms, so that's always really helpful that there's washrooms, and there's a kitchen we can use too. So there is a cost because we rent that space as a group. But it's a low cost. And then obviously the more families that are involved, we just split the cost. For us, it's really accessible and we can meet there. We meet there on a weekly basis. And I know of other local, homeschoolers that have done something very similar with a group of homeschoolers that they've met, and they've just found a space, that doesn't, you know, charge like a lot of rent. But that's certainly been like a great way for us to find, a more like consistent community, I guess. But I will mention that, and it's been amazing. I'm so grateful for it. It took us a long time to find it. It's been wonderful. And it's just been a year now that we've been involved. But we did notice that it was, how do I put this? There definitely were times throughout, more so the winter, I guess, where just a couple families would show up or a couple families would be there. Which like is fine, but sometimes like the kids could go a couple weeks without seeing their best buddy that's there. And it kind of reminds me like what you were talking about earlier, Erin, about that, I don't know how you put it, but kind of like that committing for the collective good, right? Like, so sometimes my two wouldn't want to go and we'd have the conversation. Like, I don't want to push them too much, but at the same time, I'm like, well, like your friends are going to be disappointed. And I don't know if a lot of people are going, and we want this to be available to us, which is, you know, a little bit hard for kids, especially younger kids to really understand. But anyway, yeah, those were some of the things that came to mind for me.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. The only thing that I would add to any of that, Kendall, you'd mentioned the seasonal piece, and I'm very similar that way. And I think too, we have an opportunity to like dig into like, I will often talk about like the salmon swimming upstream or things like that, where, yeah, it's completely free. And it's so easy to just invite a bunch of people to do something like that. In the winter, tobogganing here would be another one. That's also a bit tricky because it can be either too much snow, not enough snow, icy snow. But if you, you know, if you have a group of people where you're kind of committed to finding a day, it's just about getting together, right? It doesn't have to be like a super fancy thing. So, yeah, I love all those ideas. I think too, I remember reading some things from Sarah at Happiness Comes Here where they would go to a similar place and kind of like explore it and maybe nature journal if kids wanted to do that. And so they would maybe do that all four seasons. So finding things like that, that it's free, but there's a little bit of a focus to it. I think there's a lot of different things that we can do. And lastly, I think I would just say too, like we can always be keeping our eyes open a little bit if it would be helpful to help out or modify things a little bit. Like you're talking about, Ashley, as far as renting shared space. You know, if there's somebody that you think might have a hard time doing that, of course, that's a sensitive thing depending on how well you know people, but either paying it forward a little bit, or just being cognizant of the places that we rent and thinking about whether that's going to work for everybody. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so, okay.
Did we cover a lot?
I think we did.
Is this a two-parter is the question.
What's that?
Is this a two-parter?
I know. I think that is the question. Yeah. Okay. This was good. I think we did cover a lot. So thank you both. Kendall, we'll put your IG handle in the notes and we'll have to go back and think about what else we mentioned to put in there. I think there's a few resources for sure. So, okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks for joining, Kendall.
Thank you for having me. It was such a great conversation.
And this ends our conversation today. We hope you found it interesting and helpful. If you'd like to connect further or see additional content, Erin can be found on the web and on Instagram at Everlearning. Ashley can be found on Instagram at Ashley as Mama and Storytime Shells. And I, Hayley, can be found on the web and on Instagram at Taking a Kinder Path. We'd love it if you'd share this conversation with anyone you think might like it. And if you've enjoyed this episode, maybe you'd consider leaving us a review. We'd love to hear your thoughts. We're so grateful you made time in your day to listen to us chat. Thanks so much for listening.